This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
What if we could replace organs by printing new ones? What if we could reprogram our dying cells to be youthful ones? And what if we could rewrite our DNA to lead us to a healthier future? Is all this possible? We're going to find out today. Welcome to Lunch with a Healer. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Hoffman. I had the privilege of interviewing Dr. Michael Roizen about his new book, The Great Age Reboot, Cracking the Longevity Code for a Younger Tomorrow. But first, a few words about Dr. Roizen. Dr. Roizen is a board-certified anesthesiologist and internist, an award-winning author, and the chief wellness officer at the Cleveland Clinic. Dr. Roizen developed the real age concept and has authored or co-authored 5 number one New York Times bestsellers. Some of his books include You Staying Young, What to Eat When, This Is Your Do-Over, The Real Age Diet, and many, many more. He's won several awards in the medical community, given over 1,200 lectures, and made guest appearances on Oprah, CNN, The Today Show, Good Morning America, CBS, Dr. Oz, and more. He also writes a daily newspaper column and has run a radio show known as You, the Owner's Manual, for over 20 years. Is 90 going to be the new 40 within a decade? Well, it's not only possible, it's probable. Here is my conversation with Dr. Michael Roizen.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
In the words of my special guest, Dr. Michael Roizen, from his new book, The Great Age Reboot, Cracking the Longevity Code for a Younger Tomorrow, science is about to offer us the Garden of Eden. A chance not just at prolonged life, but at prolonged youth, or rather, and even better, prolonged youthful years. But it's up to you to take advantage of it. And welcome to the show, Dr. Roizen.
Oh, Susan, it's such a privilege. I'm honored. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. So we're going to discuss your exciting and inspiring new book. But first, we need to talk about some basics. What do you mean by the Great Age Reboot?
Well, life expectancy has expanded by about 2.5 years every 10 years since 1890. So we've gone from about 42 to 78 or so, 79. Women are about 3 years longer than men on average. But it's been a relatively straight line of 2.5 years every 10 years, initially due to sanitation and things for kids and infants. And now it's been due to the management of chronic disease like high blood pressure and type 2 diabetes, etc. But we're about, with an 80% likelihood, because of 14 areas of research into the basic mechanisms of aging, not of disease, but of aging, why we get older, to get a 30-year jump in the next 10 years. That jump in longevity is unprecedented. And that's what we call the Great Age Reboot. You're going to get to be a lot younger, extending the period between 20 and 60 to between 20 and 90. What that means is at 90, you'll be able to function like you do now at age 40 with at least an 80% probability. So that's what the Great Age Reboot is and how to prepare for it, both fiscally and physically and in your brain and for society is what the book and the Reboot Your Age app is all about.
It's a holistic view because you discuss the socioeconomic implications. When I've mentioned this to people, one of the first things they say is beyond, yeah, right. The second thing they say is, well, how are we going to feed all these people? You know, so it's a very important area that needs to be discussed. But I would like to discuss the science first. We need
By the way, it is such a privilege to get interviewed by you because you've obviously read the book and digested a whole bunch of components. And that's for for someone who writes a book, that's wonderful to be interviewed by someone so knowledgeable about it.
All right, let's start. Before we get into a few of these medical breakthroughs, I think you need to define aging for my listeners so they understand why these are so incredible.
We don't actually have a good definition of aging because I think that definition will change. But what we call now is developing more chronic diseases, and we call aging a period when you're very old, not being able to do as many of the things you enjoy doing as you'd like. So it isn't just how long you live and that you get older at the end period, but it's, are you able to do the things you love to do? So aging is, now, from a biologic standpoint, that's the 14 areas. And each of these areas is looked at as a part of aging, but probably one or two or three of them will be. So let me go and say the final common pathway we think is that aging is not having the same proteins that you had when you were young. That is, whether the proteins are misfolded a little, or whether they're dysfunctional for other reasons, or because you're not producing them in the same ratio or same quantity. That's what we think the final common pathway of aging is. Why that happens? Is it the environment alone? Is it your program to change? Is it, there are whole bunches of potential reasons, and how to reset it so you get younger proteins? That's what a lot of people are working on. That's the 14 different areas.
Okay. So is aging then a disease?
It depends how you again define disease. So I believe that aging is a process that just like we can change the effect of blood pressure on us, we may be able to change the effect of our getting older on our protein structure to help us stay or maybe even get younger. And the Great Age Reboot is in animal species, literally, each of these 14 things has changed the rate of aging in 14 and changed, rebooted the animal, two animal models in at least each of the 14 areas, to a younger age. If you think of it that way, then aging is a process that is reversible. Whether you want to call that process a disease or not depends on how you think of it.
Okay.
But it is a reversible process, most people think, in at least animal species.
Okay. Well, that leads into my next question, which is,
by the way, these are tougher than heck questions. They're great.
So do you believe aging then is inevitable, or we definitely have control over it?
You have control over a lot of things, but not everything. So there will be unforced errors. You will, you know, whether it's get hit by a car or be involved in an accident that ages you or tear a muscle or whatever. So some of the processes that we associate with aging are inevitable. Some of them are even programmed into our genes, and we're learning how to change that. So let me give you the example. The APOE4 gene increases dementia risk 2 to 3-fold at age 90. So instead of it being 20% chance at age 90, it's 60%. But if you change one amino acid, and they're being able to do this on your DNA, you switch it to an APOE2 gene, and you have a 1/3 normal risk, or 6%. So you've changed a 60% to a 6% with one amino acid change in gene editing. So is that inevitable? Is it inevitable that we won't be able to do that? Well, we're doing that now in a number of animal species, and all of these changes are now, all of these 14 areas are now moving into human trials.
It's just incredible. Okay, let's dive in. The 14 most prominent areas of research into aging mechanisms are stem cell production without immunogenicity, autophagy with intermittent fasting, senolytics, including therapeutic plasma exchange, gene editing, induced tissue regeneration, epigenetic reboot, elimination of obesity, white fat to brown fat transformation, immunotherapy and immunologic targeting, hormetic hyperbaric oxygen therapy, photodynamic and energy therapies, mitochondrial restoration, microbiome reprogramming, bionic bodies, and proteostasis. I've chosen about five of these to discuss in some detail. And the first is gene editing.
Gene editing, literally, we've known that gene editing could get rid of some bad genes, and we've known that probably since the Human Genome Project completed in 2002. But the big breakthrough was with the editing technology of Jennifer Duda and the group at Berkeley and at Mass General or MIT, Harvard in, I think, 2008. And I really announced and got the Nobel Prize, I think it was in 2016 or so, where you could send in a virus with a gene editing, a splice, it's called CRISPR-Cas9, and it literally can take out a old gene. Well, now we know you can both take it out and put something else in its place. At least that's some of that. And so but let me give you an example. So beta thalassemia and sickle cell disease produce an abnormal hemoglobin, different ones, but produce an abnormal hemoglobin. By eliminating that gene that produces the abnormal hemoglobin, you revert to producing fetal hemoglobin. And so the person with beta thalassemia that was 15 or so years of age that requires a transfusion every week, in 75 of the 76 patients it was done in, now doesn't require that transfusion. And instead of having a life expectancy of maybe 25, now is a life expectancy of over 65. So this has now gotten approval by the FDA as a therapy. Very expensive. The raw material costs $5 for a person, but they charge $1.2 million. Why? Because they say, one, they would have that much of a $3 million cost by age 25. So instead of that, just pay $1.2 million and they'll live a lot longer. Well, a lot of us have ethical problems with the cost structure of it now.
Yeah.
But we know that it is doable and is doable inexpensively if you look at the raw materials. So sometime competitors will come in and we will, I believe, get it much less expensive and not have to have insurance companies pay huge amounts and jack up our medical insurance costs.
Yeah. I mean, that is a huge issue, is the cost of all this.
Now, let me go and say, because just so you may go to another one where it is, how do you block the attachment of amyloid and tau to the brain? And there are two, Viagra and Bumax, bumetidine. The Gladstone at San Francisco looked at every drug approved by the FDA that was already generic and found that bumetamide, Bumax, a water pill, $4 a month, blocked the attachment of amyloid and tau to brain cells and glia cells, the supporting cells in the brain. Right. And then they did that in test tubes, and then they looked at what happened in their 12 million patient database. Those patients taking bumetamide or Bumax had a 70% reduction in their risk of dementia. So now there's a randomized trial on that. Same thing happened with Viagra and the Cleveland Clinic, and found that Viagra, compared to other erectile dysfunction pills, decreased the risk of dementia by 69%, I think it was. Women take it for pulmonary hypertension. It was about a 40% reduction in women because they take much less of it. But in any case, we think that both genders can take it, and randomize, and looking at their 15 million patient database, a 69% reduction in men. So both are now undergoing randomized trials, whether they will work. But these are generic drugs that are inexpensive and will block that protein attachment. So there are, in the 14 areas, there are inexpensive ones as well as ones that we can't control the cost of yet.
The next area is epigenetic rebooting.
Yeah, so 80% of which of your 22,500 genes are on or not are under your control. When the Human Genome Project started, both the Venter Group at in private industry and the Collins Group at NIH expected to find 300,000 genes based on the amount of DNA we had in our nuclei. They only found 22,500. They called the rest of the DNA junk DNA. 8 years later, it was found that junk DNA is really switches, rheostats, which upregulate the gene to produce more protein or downregulate it to produce less. And remember, whether you produce the protein or not is how you get the effect of your genes. Well, it turns out that you control 80% of those switches. So, for example, when you stress a muscle, that's why we think physical activity is so good. We used to think, well, it gets your heart to beat faster. It gets to dilate the arteries. That makes you function younger. And it does. But it does something even more important. It turns on genes in the muscle, one of which produces a small protein called arisin. Arisin gets across your blood-brain barrier, and it releases brain-derived neurotrophic growth factor, which grows your hippocampus, your memory center. That's why physical activity makes it much less likely that you're going to develop dementia. Not only do you have better blood flow and better oxygenation of your brain, but you grow it so that your memory center and your connections are more solid and better. You get to control, we think, about 80% of which of your genes are on or not. And that's what we call genetic self-engineering. You are a great genetic engineer, even if you didn't go to MIT or Caltech. That is the epigenetic reprogramming.
Just to get back, we're going to discuss all these epigenetic lifestyle changes that we can put into effect right now. But when you do talk about that exercise, you're not just talking about a recreational walk. What kind of exercise are you alluding to?
Well, there are four physical activities that make a difference to how long and well you live. One is any, that 10,000 step or step equivalents. You got to remember it's step equivalents. So you may not like walking, but you may like playing ping pong or playing with your grandkids or playing pickleball or playing tennis or running, you know, running after someone. Whatever you like to do, they all count. And that 10,000 step equivalence came from a Japanese pedometer manufacturer because he wanted to sell more pedometers. But he absolutely was right on. He guessed, or whatever he did, he got it right, because it is the 10,000 steps is 50% of all physical activity benefits you get from 10,000 steps. It is step or step equivalence. So walking is a key. And as you said, I can turn on my treadmill. I have a treadmill desk, and I'll turn it on just to show people that I really do have a treadmill desk, and I really do get, I don't know if you can see my pedometer. I've got 5,900 so far today, and there's my yesterday's. I think it's 15,000. So I always get 10,000 steps a day before I go to sleep. The second is resistance exercise. It turns out 20 minutes, and so I'm telling you the minimum for maximum benefit, 20 minutes of weightlifting three times a week is key. And the third is and doing it for the core group, you know, lunges, bent over back rows, squats, push-ups or planks. Those are key. In other words, it isn't how big your biceps is, it's how big your core muscles are that appears to be key. And then cardio, that is 20 minutes three times a week at 85% of your age adjusted max, which is for men is 220 minus their calendar age. It's close enough for women. It's just a little off for women, mm-hmm. but it's 220 minus your calendar age is your max. Take mm-hmm. 85% of that, and you get the number you should be doing for 20 minutes, and then maybe doing 2 minutes at the end all out if your doc says you can do it. And that reminds me, don't do any of the things we're saying today unless you check with your right. practitioner.
Right.
And then the fourth is jumping. Just 20 jumps morning and night on a hard surface so you stimulate your bone growth is key. So those are the four physical activities.
If you go on a treadmill and you run, do you still have to do the jumps?
Ah, very good question. So if you run between 3.8 and 6.3 miles per hour, you get enough jarring to get the benefits to your spine and hips that you would from jumping.
Okay.
So the value of jumping is it adds bone and keeps your discs in your back lubricated and keeps them younger. And if you run faster than 6.3 miles per hour, you're gliding and don't jar. And if you're running less than 3.8 miles per hour, you're not getting enough jar.
Wonderful advice.
That was the data. Now, we only have, I think, one study on that running equivalence, but that's the data, and it appears to be at least logical. And the studies on jumping being good for the other things, we have more data on itself.
Very interesting. Okay. I was going to ask about stretching. About yoga, about an exercise, particularly as you get older, to actually stretch, elongate the muscles, lubricate the joints in that way. Have they done any studies on that as well?
They have, but they don't appear to fit in the physical activity realm from a benefit as much as they fit in the stress management realm.
Okay.
Stress management is the most important thing we do. In the studies that have been done in 75-year-olds and older, starting yoga and stretching, they benefit but don't add to the physical activity benefit. They add, and don't decrease fractures, don't decrease
okay.
any of the things you'd expect. They are beneficial for stress management.
Okay.
So this is not to say don't do them, do them, but
right.
we put it in a different category rather than physical activity.
Okay, very interesting. The third area I'd like to discuss is senolytics.
Well, senolytics is basically getting rid of old cells and old proteins. So what happens when you have a piece of rotten fruit is it puts out a hormone, we don't know why the fruit does it, that signals to the fruit around it, and they get old and rotten too. In humans, this evolved when you were stabbed, those cells, which then got old, would put out a signal, form a scab. Makes logic, right? So you don't bleed out. That's how it evolved. But now, if you get an injury to your knee, why form a scab inside the knee? That leads to osteoarthritis and pain. So it's a dysfunction. So senolytics is taking away that dysfunction, taking away senile, old cells, and old proteins. Turns out the AMBAR study is one that has done this, and I'm skipping ahead from a time standpoint, Susan. The story actually started with young blood to an old rat, hooking the rats up. The old rat became young. They spent 50 years looking for what it was in the young blood. It turns out it's getting rid of the stuff in the old rat that is key. That's the senolysis. So AMBAR is donating a unit of blood, unit of plasma, actually. You wash the red cells and get them back every week for 5 weeks and then once a month for 4 months. In the, quote, AMBAR studies, reversed, not prevent, but reversed cognitive dysfunction in early Alzheimer's disease in randomized controlled trial. They're called AMBAR. You can Google AMBAR, A-M-B-A-R. 282 or 84 people randomly allocated, two centers in Chile, two in Spain, where it started, two in the United States, Pittsburgh and Cleveland Clinic. Because it was successful in what is called a 2B3A study at the FDA, they're now doing a 3B study where randomized 100 sites, 3,000 patients. Enrollment is ongoing, I understand. And we'll, if they get the same results, we've been told, or the company has implied that the FDA has told them that it will get an approved treatment. So that's donating your old blood, donating your old plasma, getting rid of it, you getting it washed and it getting cleaned up, but you getting just salt water and your blood back, your red cells back. So in doing that, you get rid of the old cells, you get rid of the old proteins. That's senolysis 202, I guess.
You're not kidding. So that was an area I was going to
ask. And in fact, it's inexpensive, right? We pay kids to donate plasma.
Right. It's plasma exchange. I mean, that sounds amazing. Well, the other thing about senolytics is that there are lifestyle modifications we can do now that will harvest the senolytic cells in our body. One of them is intermittent fasting, correct?
Correct.
How does that work?
We don't know.
Oh, really?
That's as simple. The 5-day a month really intermittent fast is what we have most data on working. So it's 5 days of 750 calories. We think what is happening is your body is going into survival mode. It turns off its growth factors and starts to recycle old cells. So because you have deprived it of protein and the nutrients it needs to grow, it recycles the old cells. And that, we think, makes you younger. And every biomarker of aging gets better with that. So we think that's how it works. And we think you can do that in a smaller way, by doing 7 hours of eating every day and not eating for whatever it is, 17 hours, or 8 hours and not eating for 16 hours. So by doing these things, you're doing a minimum of going ketotic and getting recycling of cells. But the real data we have is from the 5 days of Walter Longo, called fasting mimicking diet, which he does, which he has done a large number of studies on and shown to be beneficial.
Okay. How about high intensity exercise?
HIIT, or high intensity exercise, adds to longevity in two studies, doesn't in another.
Oh.
So we are not sure about it, but it probably does. That is doing at the end of cardio. Cardio, we said, was at 85% of your age adjusted max. Remember, 220 right. Minus your age, minus 15% or 85% of that number is what you want to do for 20 minutes three times a week.
Right.
Well, if you do 2 minutes of high intensity at the end of that is going all out. Again, make sure your doc says it's okay to do. Adds a little bit. It adds about 2 years of benefit, as opposed to 8 years for men, 9 years for women, of making your real age or your functional age younger. So doing the four components of physical activity makes women about 9 years younger. This might add about 2 years to it.
That's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about NAD and its impact on the process of aging and how we can protect it with the use of senolytic supplements such as spermidine and quercetin.
So most of the data on the NAD precursor supplements is animal data. We know it's safe in humans. We don't know it's effective in humans. So I want to preface the statement with that.
Okay.
But NAD is essential. The NAD to NADH is essential process in our energy transfer and in producing the basic ATP and even CTP that we use to generate energy. And that's what our cells need energy. It's like your computer needs energy to keep functioning. Our cells need energy to keep functioning. And when it runs down, you don't function at as high a level. And it's one of the theories on aging is that that's a basic deficit. So in animal models, we do know that giving NAD precursors or NAD IV, that is, into the animal directly, does help reverse a number of diseases, including mental or the ability, and improves the ability of the mouse to run mazes, etc. We don't know that this happens in humans. And a number of the supplements have been used to, at least in cells, in laboratories, in cell cultures, to maintain energy production and maintain the NAD to NADH ratio. NAD does decline as we go, as we get older. It's unclear how to supplement this effectively in humans for the effect. A number of studies are ongoing, and at recent aging conferences, a lot of the aging researchers are taking the precursor supplements with other things to help maintain these so they get into cell, such as quercetin or spermidine.
Okay.
The data on spermidine and wheat germ or having it in walnuts, etc., is pretty good by itself, much better than the data on the NAD precursors, because we have human data on the spermidine and walnuts and wheat germ as a, in randomized controlled trials that have shown a sizable cognitive and other benefit. The quercetin data isn't definitive, or the other things are not, but since you mentioned spermidine, we've looked at 53 different supplements in the Reboot Your Age app library, and spermidine is one that has a benefit. Quercetin, not. NAD, maybe. But that is quercetin by itself, not yet. There are a number of these that are what we would call not yet. We don't have enough data on their routine use in aged individuals.
Right. Yeah, it's confusing for anyone out there who is interested in longevity, because there's so much information overload now.
It's why we have a scientific team, right? And a scientific advisory board that reviews it and in an NIH study section, either approves or revises the recommendations of the scientists.
Right. And why your book is so important. Here's one that is life-changing, and it's the transformation of white fat to brown fat.
When we are kids, when we're infants, when we're just born, we have a lot of brown fat around our heart and our thymus and our glands and our chest, which keeps us warm when our mothers can't swaddle us. So very important for keeping us alive. That brown fat came from mother fat, or pluripotent fat, we call mother fat. And that mother fat also can go to white fat. As we get older, we store fat, if you will, as we store calories as white fat. Used to be very effective because starvation was common. We were warm enough, but we would starve. And so we got this, developed this mechanism to have extra calories stored as white fat. Bears and hibernation is the same thing. They store white fat that they get to use when they're not eating. Well, it turns out we have a problem with too many calories in the United States and around the world in developed countries. We have an obesity problem. 43% of Americans are frankly obese, and another 29 or so percent are overweight. So how do you get rid of those, the problem of obesity? Well, it wouldn't be a problem if it didn't cause disease, but it causes, it's the major cause of osteoarthritis. It's the major cause of inflammation throughout our body. It's the major cause of our immune system not able to fight cancer. It's a major cause of heart disease and stroke. It's a major cause of dementia. It's a major cause of kidney problems, etc. So say you could take that white fat, regress it to mother fat, turn it into brown fat. We could heat ourselves. It wouldn't need as much energy to heat the house, if you will. And so we'd help that problem environmentally. But in addition, we get rid of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and we get rid of a lot of the type 2 diabetes, and we get rid of heart disease and stroke and dementia, a large cause, and a large cause of osteoarthritis, and a large cause of cancer. And that's done in two, in now three animal species. And researchers at Clemson did this with sheep. And why? Because sheep can't stop eating either. And they develop non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which limits their wool production. And so Clemson did this to say, could we do this in sheep? And the answer is it worked in sheep. So the people who are doing this say if they have enough money to do it, they'll be able to test this in humans and see if we can eliminate obesity in 2 or 3 years.
It's phenomenal. I know we're limited on time. I would love to finish this up by talking about some epigenetic or lifestyle modifications that you would recommend that will help us right now and get us ready for the great age reboot. The first area that's probably the most important to keep us healthy is stress control. What do you do yourself?
I have, you know, it is posse and purpose. Part of my posse is I have a spectacularly wonderful wife of 50 years. So I depend a lot on her as a best friend and advocate. And then it is other friends. So what do I do is, and as you get older, you've got to nurture your friends, call them, because otherwise you don't get that benefit. The point on this is, yes, deep breathing and meditation I do every day. It's actually part of what the app triggers me to do. But I also call three friends on a weekend in addition to the four I normally see and talk to during the week. And then I have a purpose, which is helping people understand how much control they have over their rate of aging, and how to prepare for the great age reboot. So stress management is absolutely the key. And by the way, when you do that, even with meditation, it changes over 256 genes from either on to off or off to on. So it's a very powerful effect on which of your genes are on or off.
Yeah. That's why I think they're doing many more studies on mind-body medicine, because it has such an effect.
And by the way, you're absolutely right. It is a huge effect. It is the greatest effect we know of.
I know. I would love for you to just talk about diet for a minute. I know you've written a wonderful couple of books on what we should eat and when we should eat it. I know you recommend basically a plant-based diet, but it's the when we should eat that's pretty important as well.
Well, it's also what you want to do is make sure in your plant-based diet you're getting enough protein. Some of the keys are getting it at the right time, because we tend to lose muscle mass, and that being a problem as we get older. And protein is essential. It isn't just doing bodybuilding. It is doing it with proteins. We think plant proteins are excellent, don't get me wrong. But it's a lot harder on a plant-based diet to get it. So my having an egg white veggie omelet, I get 50 grams of protein from that every Saturday and Sunday when I cook that, just from the egg whites. I have a salmon burger, I have a salmon burger every day at lunch. And so that's my first thing. And so I'm getting protein that way. But the key point is, the foods we know are harmful are things that raise blood sugar too fast, or that change the gene functioning of the bacteria inside your gut. So what are those? Things that raise your blood sugar too fast, simple sugars, simple carbohydrates stripped of their bran, and syrups. So maple syrup, wonderful taste, unfortunately, raises your blood sugar too fast. Now, there may be things coming along the way. We used to say everything that ended in ose, glucose, maltose, dextrose was bad. Well, we now think that maybe trehalose and allulose may slow the rise of those other sugars. So stay tuned, because we'll have much more data, we expect, in 3 or 4 years. No one paid any attention to trehalose and allulose. They're in dates and raisins, but no one paid any attention because it was very expensive to get them out. Right. But now synthetic processes have occurred. So you don't want things that raise your blood sugar too fast. So avoid simple sugars, added syrup, simple carbs. And red meat, processed red meat, egg yolks, those are three of the most problematic, because they have both carnitine lesser than choline and one or more of those, and saturated fat. Carnitine tablets doesn't change the bacteria genome production of inflammatory proteins, but carnitine and saturated fat, as in red meat or pork, etc. It isn't other white meat, it is a red meat or processed red meat. Those together in 80 some percent of us change the bacteria inside our gut, actually change not the bacteria, but turn on a gene, just like we exercise and turn on a gene. Well, when you eat that food, it turns on a gene in the bacteria that produces an inflammatory protein that is more risky to you than a high cholesterol is. So that inflammation caused by trimethylamine production because you had red meat or red, carnitine less than choline with saturated fat is the problem of that. So other than that, every food is great. Salmon is great. Ocean trout is great. Avocados are great. Virtually every vegetable that isn't contaminated with something is a great choice as well. Simple sugars, added syrup, simple carbs, and then foods with saturated fat and foods that are fried. Those are the foods that we think have a problem to eat, and everything else is great.
And when?
You want to eat in an 8-hour window, and usually eating earlier in the day. I don't know if you can see, the sun is up here. Eating earlier in the day when the sun is up is a better thing. More early, less later. Now, in America, we have trouble. So I don't eat till 11 a.m. and then I eat my second meal at 7. It would be even better if I ate at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. But eating, that's because a calorie is a calorie is a calorie in the test tube. But in your body, a calorie in the morning is less of a calorie than a calorie in the evening. Mm-hmm. And again, that 5-day, 750 calorie a day, low protein, if you will, diet is 5 days a month is, in fact, probably the best way of recycling, even better than the 7 or 8 hour window eating.
There's no one answer is the answer.
That's correct. It is. We know, as I said, sugars are harmful because they attach to proteins and cause dysfunction in the proteins. We know that some of that carnitine less than choline changes with saturated fat changes the inflammation levels in the body of 82% of us, or 80 plus percent of us. We don't know other things that are great or other things that are really harmful, with some exceptions. We know that coffee is great. We know extra virgin olive oil is great. We know that DHA and EPA and ALA of the fish and omega-3s are great. But we don't know, and blueberries are great, but we don't know many other things that make a difference.
Right. Okay, last one we'll talk about, we could go on and on, is sleep, because it's crucial and we all know why we need to sleep, the reparative properties of sleep. But you in your book talk about how important it is to reach the 6.5 to 7th hour of sleep.
Yeah, so you want to shrink your brain cells during the night. And the longer you sleep, the more you shrink it. That is, you get a little dehydrated during the night, your brain does. A little is good because it opens up pathways that are otherwise closed, and during the night they open up and you get rid of waste products through them. It's, we don't have a lymphatic system to get rid of waste in our brain the way we do in the rest of our body. So researchers at the University of Rochester, I believe, first discovered this, but it's now been reproduced. You get rid of all those waste products that otherwise would cause inflammation in the brain between that 6.5 and 7.5 or 8 hour of sleep. And so the longer you sleep, and we don't want you drinking water during sleep. First thing when you wake up, you can have water, but you want to be a little dehydrated to get rid of those waste products in that during the night. And the longer you stay asleep, the more dehydrated those cells get, the more waste products you can get rid of.
Okay, fascinating. What's your favorite supplement?
Oh, you know, if you said favorite, I don't know.
Essential, most essential.
When we look at the data, there are 15 or 16 that are beneficial for people as they get older. I suppose I have a couple favorites, and they're controversial. So phosphocreatine is one that builds muscle. Muscle builders use it when they're younger. In the elderly, it also prevents the lack of muscle, what we call sarcopenia, the inability to have balance, the inability to have. And it also, the phosphocreatine is good for brain functioning. Another one, and I'm going to say this is controversial, is one that decreases inflammation. So I think the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has done a disservice in dissuading many people from taking baby aspirin with a half a glass of warm water before and after, and with bovine colostrum. Why? Because you can decrease the side effects of the baby aspirin by more than 70%. And not only do you decrease your risk of heart attack, stroke, you also decrease your risk of 13 cancers and probably of inflammatory conditions as well. So I take, if I was going to say what's my most essential one, it's either the phosphocreatine or the coenzyme Q10 or a multivitamin or vitamin D. I mean, I take, as you can tell, a fair number, or a probiotic. I take a variety of them, or the baby aspirin that I take morning and night. Why do I take it twice a day? Because once a day is good for platelet antagonism and decreasing heart attack and stroke from that standpoint. But from an inflammatory standpoint, inflammatory disease and cancer, it looks like you've got to take it or have a higher level to do that, meaning twice a day to keep a more stable level and to decrease inflammation. So that's why I do that. So controversial, but if you go to the Reboot Your Age app, we show you the pluses and minuses and discuss that and come out in the side of talk with your practitioner about it, but that most people over the age, men over the age of 45 and women over the age of 50, it's a net benefit to them, even decreases breast cancer risk.
Wow. And each time you take it with bovine colostrum?
No, every time I take it with a half a glass of warm water before and after. I only have to take the bovine colostrum once a day. And okay, it doesn't matter when I take it because it, okay, it helps protect against the problem by building, okay, the lining up of your gut wall.
Right. Fascinating. I know, it's all in the book. Do you take resveratrol?
I don't. The data on resveratrol in animals and when injected is pretty good. The data in humans is non-existent and has not shown a benefit.
Wow.
Now, we don't know whether that's a problem with the preparation, a problem whether it isn't because it wasn't given with NAD and resveratrol together, what right, the issue is. But in any case, until data comes out showing that in some way in humans it is beneficial, I don't take that.
Very interesting. The website is rebootyourage.com.
Well, I think that works, but the real website is greatagereboot.com.
Greatagereboot.com. And all of your books are available everywhere. I don't think you have to look too far. We have just touched on what you discuss in the book. It's just terrific. It's been a privilege and an honor to interview you.
Privilege is mine. Thank you.
And I would recommend your book to everybody, everybody. It's a fascinating read. And it's, you know, you describe things in a way that a layman will understand, really, I think. And then we haven't even touched on the repercussions if we, in fact, do live a longer life.
There are beneficial reproductions for society if we do it right.
Right.
And hopefully we'll do it right. And so that's really why we wrote the book, to talk to people about what they can do it right and what society can do it right.
Who doesn't want to live a healthy, useful life? I mean, isn't that the goal? To live the best, highest quality of life that we can, to be able to do everything that we enjoy.
That's exactly right. To be able to do everything you want to do and enjoy it. That's
exactly
right.
Thank you very much for all the work you do and your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Susan. Privilege is mine. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.